Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Welcome back to the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast for Stage 6 of the Tour de France Femme avec Zwift from Albi to Blagnac. Maybe one of the most moderate stages without theoretically the most excitement for the week, but actually it offered a lot today, both in the stage and before, with some drama. Benji, the drama of yesterday, yeah, with the Vollering 20-second penalty, that got a lot worse for SD Works, or maybe better, depending on which way you look at it, this morning.
Yes, indeed. We had Danny Stumm, the DS, came out after we recorded a podcast yesterday, criticizing the UCI commissaire, saying that, or should they be leading this Tour de France Femme when it comes to their decision-making? So he was not happy. And I don't think I've seen a single comment supporting what Danny Stumm said anywhere. So I think everyone has unanimously decided that what Danny Stumm said was wrong. That was not okay, because it was clear to me, rewatching the tape so many times, that there should have been a time penalty. And she's kind of lucky that it's 20 seconds. Now, okay, we're going into the evening. That's what we see. The riders like Vollering and so forth. She didn't necessarily know directly after the race. She had an interview afterwards where the Belgian media kind of told her for the first time. And I always hated when riders get to know something the first time in a media interview, because then you've got a minute of the interviewer just asking, how do you feel about that? How do you feel about that? And that's so cringe. I can't stand it. But anyway, they were on the page, the SD Work page, of, okay, we didn't really do anything wrong. We don't see what we did wrong. We cross forward to this morning and we got a new message. I saw a new message on the internet by UCI Media, right?
UCI Media has been active. Whoever runs that Twitter account's been, holy shit, they've been working overtime this week. They had to send 3 tweets this week. Stam has been excluded from the race, not just for his incident in the car yesterday. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm pretty sure he got excluded from the race rather than just 200, 500 Swiss franc fine because of his comments. And his comments weren't just, I disagree with the decision, I don't really understand what I did wrong. He actually, like, he attacked the commissaires. He even went
verbally.
He even went to the extent of, like, attacking their integrity, saying that SD yep. Works are being, like, unfairly targeted, just that the UCR, the commissaires, wants, like, AVV to win the race, he was implying. I'm not in the SD Works team bus. I feel like I've been very critical already this week, and I don't like doing it to the same team over and over. But the environment in that team to me looks really bad. And yep. You mentioned that in the documentary you saw. I obviously can't get the context. My Dutch, I am fluent, I can't get the full context. And just, there's just no, like, it doesn't matter, man. Like, okay, for sure. In the heat of the moment, I also have a fuse. And in sports, I also, have blown up, whatever. But this is like afterwards, you're not going to change the 20-second penalty. How can they not? And even this morning, like, he's woken up a new day. And I always think with people, how are they the next day? They've slept on it. They've woken up. Maybe they say, you know what? Yesterday, I was a hothead. I fucked up.
Yeah.
20-second penalty could have been worse. In fact, I'm glad Demi's okay. And, you know, we go forward. But this morning, Stam's like, oh, I still don't know what the problem is. It's like, well, then you're the problem. And actually, you shouldn't be in the race if that's how you think.
Exactly. Now, as a follow-up to that, that's not just the only consequence for SD Works. There's also tiny consequences everywhere, because next to the 20 seconds, there's also other consequences in other classifications. Obviously, Vollering doesn't care about the points classification. She might not even care about the QOM classification. But because of that, she's now on -2 points for the Queen of the Mountains classification, which is kind of intriguing, because you've got this battle between Yara Kastelein, Annemiek van Vleuten, and Vollering when it comes to QOM right now. Before the stage that is upcoming that we're going to talk about, Kastelein is on 23 points, van Vleuten on 0, and Vollering, because of the penalty, on -2. And there's only 25 points still available. So if Vollering gets both climbs tomorrow, which is Aspin plus Tourmalet, she can still win QOM depending on whether we saw Castellane active today. And we suggested yesterday, will we see her in the breakaway? Will we see Phoenix trying to control the breakaways to make sure she can do it from the peloton? And, well, we saw a different kind of breakaway on the road, right? April Tacy and Rachel Nealon at the start. And when you saw a small breakaway at the start, were you certain it was going to be a controllable breakaway?
I thought it'd get brought back early like it often happens. And then... a new break would go, particularly if they got brought back before the last Category 4 climb. And, you know, these Cat 4 climbs, two riders is enough to mop up all those points in front of Castellane. So, yeah, Phoenix de Koenig, as she was maybe too close in GC to be allowed. I don't know. We couldn't watch it because coverage hadn't started yet. So we don't exactly know what happened in break formation. But, yeah, I think it would have been hard for Castellane to get in, frankly, on a minute. And it's also a lot to ask for her team to basically not allow any breakaway to form at all. And with Vibas out, like I said yesterday, this is a huge opportunity for Charlotte Kuhl and Team DSM, for Chiara Consonni, for UAE, ADQ, for Mariana Voss on Team Jumbo-Visma, where, you know, they got a realistic chance, above 10% chance each, of probably winning this stage. Kuhl higher than that. So I really thought it would be a controlled sprint, because the parkour isn't that hard, and it's a short, what is it, 122K, so 3 hour state, no, maybe three and a half, no, 3 hours on the dot. I was like, they got to be able to control this. But I think the seven woman teams, and already some riders dropped out, it makes it really hard to control, especially if the riders attacking are actually really strong riders as well. That, and then maybe you compare like Emma Norsgaard, for example, case in point, to the fifth or sixth rider in the hierarchy at, you know, Jumbo or something. Like, they're much stronger, those sort of riders.
Yeah. Léa Courinier, for example, at DSM is the type of rider you'd see at the front of the peloton pacing, for example, which would be hard to bring back a three-woman breakaway with Emma Norsgaard, Agnieszka Skalnak-Sojka, and Sandra Alonso. Alonso, we know from sprints. She's had pretty good sprints in the past, and she rides from before Terra Set Out Tizid. Skalnak-Sojka is the kind of rider where she's been really bloody good this year, but is it necessarily from breakaway against Norsgaard and Alonso that she's very competitive? Not necessarily, but I still like seeing it. And then Norsgaard, we know she's good when it comes to lure type. She's pretty good at the Roubaix type parkour. She, I think, got second on Omloop behind Kopecky at a certain point in recent years. She's done loads of stuff. Sprints in the past and so forth. So she had a slight transformation of rider type this year towards a bit less sprint, a bit more versatile, I would say. And this break was up the road, and I was thinking, what's going to happen? Who's going to control? But we're getting towards these hills. We're getting towards these hills that are hard to control. And there was this one hill where I think it was the Côte du Clos Portier, but I'm not certain it was that one. Labou was pacing over the top because DSM was probably like, we need to put our best climber at the front to make sure we can control the breakaway. But then you get the issue that your sprinter gets in trouble. And as Labou was rolling over the top of the summit, we saw at the back that Cole was dropping into a second group. And that's the kind of thing we always talk about when it comes to sprinting teams needing to reduce the tempo on the climb, which gives the breakaway a bit more option, while on the flat end. And while on the flat section, they basically have to push through entirely to try and make it. And we saw that exact scenario, the opposite side of the coin here. So Cole is then behind after that hill, behind the peloton, 15 seconds. We see rider by rider of DSM waiting. And I was kind of waiting what would happen in the peloton, because like other teams would have to take over. And it took a while, I feel like. But then UAE took over, right, in peloton to try and keep Cole behind.
Yeah, they started pacing. I thought Jumbo, they moved riders to the front. And then you're like, well, maybe SD Works need to pace, because Capecchi's not slow. Like, she can win this sprint too. So
yeah,
if these teams all collaborate, they can keep Cole behind. And one of those three are guaranteed pretty much to win the stage. But, and you also got to manage this breakaway too. You can't just wait for DSM to come back and then they're going to have to recover because they've just done a chase as a team. And then they're going to go slow and not really bring the gap back too much. So, but anyway, they did come back. There was a crash by Ewers and Castellane. Ewers crashed pretty hard into a ditch, I think. And yeah, but that was just on a straight road. Cash line got straight back up. And the gap's at 133. 33Ks to go. And you already mentioned her, but Skalniak Sojka, she is, like, you look at her and you're like, oh, she's small, not that powerful, but she's actually like a TT specialist. And yeah. if there's a TT, I really want to see how she goes on Sunday in that Poe TT that has two climbs. Because she's like, as I said, she's small, but well, not small, but like, she's not like as big as Van Dijk or Reusser.
Yeah.
But she's like won all of her races basically from her TT or using her TT on the road bike, like on the prologue last year at Toscana. And yeah, she's like, she won the Polish TT championships. Her climbing to date, like in the La Vuelta, she disappointed, and in UAE Tour on her feet, I really expected, because TT riders in the men usually on her feet, like Plap and Bilbao, can do pretty well on that climb, but wasn't that good. And then on Laguna Estanaya, she came 10th. And I was like, all right, ahead of Sant Esteban. I was like, okay, I think there's a GC rider in there in Skalniak Sojka. So I really want to see how she goes tomorrow and on Sunday, just to give you some background on who she is and how I see her progressing. Yeah, she's 26 and she's been riding for quite a while, but I still think there's a lot of margin there. And so, yeah, I'm keen to see how she goes this weekend. But they're pulling really strong, three really strong riders. It did look, though, Benji, when Jumbo, DSM, and UAE were all contributing, it looked pretty under control and the gap was coming down steadily. Like, it got to 5Ks to go, 18 seconds, and it's coming down. And if you're doing the maths on how much time they're losing per K, it looks fine. Like, it looks like they're going to get caught with 2Ks to go. And Alonso was fucked. She, like, stopped pulling because she was about to drop. And then, I don't know what happened. It just stalled. I don't think Norsgaard was... I can't have been holding back. Did they just run out of domestiques on the front?
I would argue that's a theory. Obviously, with Cole having come back, DSM was in that play, like you said. But the factor there is that we've got one less rider in the Tour de France Femmes per team than we have in the Men's Tour de France, for example. So it's inherently harder for these teams to control a breakaway because they've got less domestiques to do so. And keeping in mind that DSM also kind of holds Labou half back, just in case for GC still. So they got to keep that in mind. When it comes to Jumbo, Rianne Marcus probably isn't going all out either when it comes to that stuff. UAE has two and a half-ish riders that are still trying to keep themselves up there in GC that are probably not going full either at the front of the group. So I think we need to keep all that in mind. And then you're left with like seven riders across the entire route that are domestiquing, but some might have done the work at the start of the stage to control whatever breakaway actions there were, and then a bit later to control in the middle phase of the race, and then to bring Cole back to the peloton already. So we've got so many domestiques that have worked already at this point, and I really think that is impacting the ability of breakaways to be able to win these races, which is especially the reason why I was always so fanatic about, I want more breakaways, I want more people attacking. Because I always feel like the sprinters teams are paper tigers in these races. And we kind of saw that happening, like you say. And the gap does keep dropping. 3 kilometers to go. Alonso dropped off the front. So the gap went down to 18 seconds. And 3 kilometers, 18 seconds. If you've got enough domestiques, that can work out. But if you're limited, that's going to be a close one. And it was limited, but I think it got worse with what happened at 800 meters to go. Because they went through a chicane and we saw a Seratizid rider in the peloton in 15th position, maybe, kind of having to brake to not crash. But that caused Balsamo to have to brake and ended up crashing. And then there was a bit of a pileup and there was basically a group of 17 to 20 riders chasing the front of the race. All the riders that crashed, 3 kilometer rule most likely on this parcours. So no worries when it comes to timing. But it really did disrupt the chase because then suddenly Henderson was off the front for a bit.
I think Voss tried to use her for reverse lead out to make Capecchi or Cool chase. It didn't really work because neither of them bit. And that basically just meant you have Henderson chasing Norsgaard. And so she's not really going much faster. Plus the gap is huge. In fact, you know, if you went Marcus then Henderson or Henderson and Marcus lead out for Voss, they probably catch her, but yep. Norsgaard's basically attacked Skalniak Sojka. She didn't wait for the sprint. She couldn't wait for the sprint because the peloton was closing in. That chicane with the tram tracks, I gotta say, it was quite tight. And
yeah,
a I was not surprised. When I saw the brake go through it, I was like, they're going to crash behind in that because it's a hectic sprint finish they're chasing. So don't know about that. Couldn't find a last guy that didn't have tram tracks in it. But anyway.
It's actually sad.
Yeah. Norsgaard goes clear, holds off Skalniak Soyka, and most importantly, the peloton behind with Cole beating Capecchi. Capecchi was furious, though, but she kind of stopped. When Norsgaard crossed the line, she gave up. Voss fourth, Paladin fifth, Consonni sixth, Julie Devilda seventh, Martelak eighth, Guazzini ninth, and Skalniak Soyka was caught but just hung on to come top 10. And so that's actually Norsgaard's first ever World Tour win, which is somewhat,
crazy.
Yeah, a little bit surprising because when she broke, like she came second in Omloop in 2021. She came second in Brugge de Panna in 2021, where she was actually the 10th best, or like one of the best riders in the world, like really consistent results across all her races and the classics, but she was second in a lot of them. And then, yeah, just never won a World Tour race because she's not, her sprint isn't, yeah, it isn't the best. And so it's hard to win with that. And so she did something different today, and Movistar played a blinder again.
Exactly. And that's the beauty of it is it's a team with not necessarily the top five sprinter in the race anymore, to the point that they're now excessively choosing to put her in the breaker, which I love. I love that strategy. It's a gamble, but it pays off in this occasion. And otherwise, what would you have gotten with Norsgaard in the sprint? Maybe it's a 4, 5, 6, 7 position in the sprint. I'd rather try and win from the breakaway at that point. Then they ended up pulling that off. And yes, there were things during the race that hindered the chase a bit. Yes, that crash might have been a reason for it. But that's one of the reasons that you go in breakaways and that you hope that something fucks up behind. Because if you're in the peloton and you leave it late, it probably wasn't a decision to leave it late this time around. But if they leave it late, then something can always happen. We saw it at Roubaix Femme, for example. There was a breakaway. They left it late. The gap was huge. And then a crash happened in the chase behind. And, well, the breakaway ends up winning. So this is one of those occasions as well where that might have influenced it. But I also think that it would have been close regardless. But that being said, it's a wonderful victory for Movistar. Second already in this race. And when it comes to GC, they're ahead of Vollering at the moment in front of a very big day tomorrow. I think that team is very happy. And I think they've also made good team car decisions to also give a thumbs up to a team at some point. There's been a few wobbles a few times where there was like, they should have done that or they should have done that. That was a bit of a mistake, but I don't think they've done major fuck-ups this race so far.
I think Movistar have been really good. And same with Canyon SRAM. I got to say, Canyon SRAM, like, okay, they didn't win today, nor did they get the podium in the stage they deserve, but they put their riders in a position to succeed. And, you know, most likely in a different world, Skalniak Soyka at least comes second. That's better than you're going to get. They don't have a sprinter. So I think Canyon SRAM have been good too. But yeah, you already mentioned it, Benji. Tomorrow's stage, I've been hanging out for it. Like, it was a bit of a tease with the Van Vleuten and Vollering attacks on the Carl to Rodez stage, and then they stopped. Because I was like, I've been hanging out. I want to see the two big guns, and anyone else that wants to join, go head-to-head GC battling. That's what I've been waiting for since the Vuelta when it was so good a month and a half ago. I just can't wait to see round two or round three if you include the Tour de France fam last year. But so, yeah, I can't wait for tomorrow.
How will it play out, though? Because we've got this stage, and if we take a look in-depthly at the parkour, there's also an initial flat part that intrigues me. It's 50 kilometers of flat, and if you are SDWorks, if you are Movistar, do you care about people attacking the peloton?
Well, not really, unless it's like Castellan or someone.
Well, do they care about, well, because she's closing GC, not because of QOM, right?
yeah, because she's on 1 minute. But yeah, it's from Lannemezant to Tourmalet-Bagnères, 91 kilometers. As Benji said, 50 Ks flat. I think Capecchi's basically won green mathematically, so they shouldn't even worry about the intermediate sprint. Col d'Aspin, 12K, 6.6%. That's quite hard. Like, I know 6.6% doesn't sound that hard, but we've seen that can split the race easily. And then there's a 13-kilometer descent, and then the Tourmalet, the first 3, 4, 5 kilometers are not so steep, even though the average is 7% over 17 Ks, but the last 12 Ks are really, really hard. Like, all average over 8%, a lot of them about 9, 10%. It goes up to 2,100 meters. It's a super hard climb. It's much, much harder than Covadonga. It's harder than Laguna Estanaya. It's harder than Petit Ballon, Plat de Varsel. It's harder than Super Planche or Planche de Belfi. It's an hour climb to over 2,000 meters. And I think Marion Roos said today, a 20-second penalty. I mean, it's not truly correct, but if Vollering has the same legs as Covadonga and is that much better than Van Vleuten, 20 seconds shouldn't matter for her tomorrow on this climb.
That is true. It is intriguing to look at it, though, because I feel like the evolution of the year makes it very difficult for me to predict who's going to be better of the two. Because, like you said it already, Vuelta was... Vollering was better. Van Vleuten ends up winning because she benefits from Piguet, but Piguet was deserved, as in it was a right to benefit, I would say, based on the analysis afterwards. But if we look at the Giro Don, then it's difficult to say, Van Vleuten is so much better than in the Vuelta, because we don't necessarily have the 1v1 there. So then we're looking at who was behind her. Yeah, the gaps were huge, but was that necessarily as a consequence of one mountain stage, or was it the entire way through? Stuff like that. So it's very difficult to compare Van Vleuten and Vollering based on what we've seen so far this year against each other on the Tourmalet parkour and say, this rider should be better than the other. Based on the hill stage, one would argue. I think I posted a poll on Twitter the other day, and I think 70% said that Vollering would be winning the GC. That was with the fact that she was, 12 seconds ahead or something in GC, but not sure if that was factored in by those people, but that means that a lot of people believe that the hill qualities will shine through as well. The factor that she was better than Van Vleuten on the hill stage will factor through on the mountain stage, which isn't directly true, right? Because it's kind of similar with Pogacar and Vingegaard on hilly parkour. I would say Pogacar, but on mountain parkour, I would say Vingegaard. And here it's kind of the same, where I'm like, I'm not sure if Vollering is also at the top level on those mountains on Tourmalet against Van Vleuten, but it's going to be much closer than last year, that's for sure.
I'm also, it makes a difference. I don't know whether Van Vleuten will just attack anyway, because, she's...
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how patient she'll be, frankly, but it should make a difference, the fact that Vollering has to attack. If two riders are equal, like almost perfectly equal, even on 7%, it makes a difference that one has to pull and the other's in the wheel. So, but I think AVV will attack anyway.
I think so as well, because last year she kind of had to attack on the first mountain stage, but we need to add the factor that Van Vleuten probably thinks in her head, like she says about Amstel all the time, I need to do it from the bottom of the climb to make it as hard as possible to make sure I can benefit from my longer climbing over these punchers. Maybe she takes that strategy and puts it the same way on these mountain stages and just goes all in with the train of Movistar tries to launch her like they always try and do, maybe towards a satellite ride that is in the breakaway already. And maybe that's the factor that they'll do, and then they'll see if she can just keep on punching it towards the top and hoping that they can therefore just be better because of Van Vleuten's longer climbing is in their head maybe better.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a big risk if I was in my play defensively, actually.
Does that benefit Vollering's punch?
Well, I think Vollering, I would have been more confident in Vollering, but the stress of this week, like for sure that whole team is just a ball of stress, man. Like all the issues with the not chasing Danny Stam.
Yeah.
I think that's not the best way to prepare for the most important stage. But honestly, I think Vollering should kill her tomorrow. I think she's the better pure climber right now, and I think Vollering wins with a big gap tomorrow.
Okay.
I think she looks good. She just got to stay calm, follow AVV initially, be patient, and then do her thing and attack her. The thing is, on Covadonga, she just kept pacing because she had to gain a minute. Now she has to gain, less than 20 seconds. Does she just say, I can wait till the final K, attack you there, get the bonus seconds? 5-8 second gap, play it on the TT. It's not like a minute she has to make up. So, but yeah, I think she wins Vollering tomorrow. I think she puts it out of reach even in the TT.
I don't really care who wins as long as it's with a close enough gap to make the TT interesting. That's my one hope tomorrow. But I also feel like if one gets dropped by the other, it's not going to be a small gap. And
yeah, it's a big climb.
I feel like I'm also leaning more towards Vollering doing it, but my initial prediction of this race, to counter your prediction of Vollering, was Van Vleuten, and I might as well just double down and triple down and say Van Vleuten will resurrect herself and prove the haters wrong.
Who do we think is the best of the podium contenders? Bauernfeind, Longoborghini, Mulman, Nivea Doma, got Kastelein looking good. On GC, she's up there. Liana Lipid, I don't see. Is this suiting Labou, Ludwig? Who do we like for those riders?
That is a very difficult question, but personally, I think Labou's better on longer climbs. Whether it's enough to compete with the others, she didn't look amazing in the first few days, but when it comes to the long climbing, I'm somewhat hopeful. Molman's looking good with all the seconds she already gained. Like she actively has gained seconds. She's second in GC. She's the highest of all the GC riders, technically. I think it's gonna be between Molman and, you reckon, I don't know. Based on the first few days, I'm not saying Bauernfeind. I'm saying Labou and Molman. Probably Molman.
I think Nivea Doma is going to be good.
Okay.
I think she's going to pace herself well.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, from memory last year, she was actually quite, on maybe some medium mountain stages, but last year I remember she was actually quite conservative. Like in the Le Markstein stage, she maybe dropped early, but then she came, there were such big gaps. It's hard. I mean, she dropped Elisa Longoborghini by nearly 2 minutes on the Le Markstein stage, and then on Super Planche de Belfi, she also dropped ELB again, and Labou, Persico. Damn, Persico was so good last year.
Yeah.
Maybe she comes back. But yeah, I think Nivea Doma with her and Bauernfeind could cause some chaos tomorrow, that's for sure. In fact, you know, SD Works are really missing Niamh Fisher-Black here. They had her in the Vuelta. She did the Giradonna where she came top 10. Yep. They don't have anyone to set a pace for Vollering. Like Royster can set, but not for 5Ks on 9%, just for the first part. Like she's going to have to attack early or just the race is in Patino's hands.
I think Movistar's just going to launch it. I straight up think they're going to do it, regardless of Van Vleuten being behind on GC.
All right. Probably they will. Otherwise, tomorrow there's also Classico San Sebastian, 231Ks with pretty good start list, but to be honest, it's the post-tour race, and I'm not ready to see male riders who just did the Tour de France again this soon. Asia 2R got Gull and O'Connor and co, but yeah, Remco is the huge favorite. He's won the race twice. He won last year before his Vuelta prep in dominant fashion, like a 2 minute ridiculous gap, and crazy. Rodriguez is doing it too, even though he crashed. So I'm keen to see how he goes. And Ayuso, who crashed this week as well. UAE have probably got the second strongest team after Remco. So,
We forgot to mention one thing about TDFF. Hentala and her DS got thrown out. So that's Mormon's main DS that is out of the race.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, she's experienced enough. I think she just knows what to do tomorrow, at least, to follow. But and SD Works only have one car they're using in the race, despite both Van der Breggen and Stam being licensed to drive it, and they have other DSs. It's all strange. But anyway, big day of racing tomorrow. Big day of racing. Can't wait to watch the GC action that we've been all waiting for before the TT on Sunday. But I hope you enjoyed the recap. Maybe there's more drama in the morning. I don't think so, though. And we'll see you with the recaps of those races tomorrow. Ciao.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.